Got a loaded episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show coming your way with my guest, Dan Titus. We talked about an important emerging rookie on Contender, DiVincenzo's new role in the Wolves, and then we created a team of breakout players before I opened up the mailbag to answer your questions. One quick note, we recorded this show before Paul George hyperextended his knee in Monday night Sixers game. We did talk about Philly. Of course, the George injury changes things, so keep that in mind as you listened. All that's coming up next. Welcome back to another episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Joining me today is Yahoo Sports fantasy basketball analyst Dan Titus. Dan, what's going on, dude?
KOC, what's good with you, man? Happy to be on your show, and congratulations to you, the number one sports podcast on Spotify right now, man. Let's go.
I like seeing that little boost for the new podcast. It's good to see. It's a good sign of growth. I'm excited about that, to see that. And, you know, I'm sure hopefully it does doing well on Apple and YouTube as well. Appreciate you joining me today, Dan. We're going to be talking about potential breakout players. You've been doing that for Yahoo Sports over the past week on the fantasy basketball side. But first, let's knock out the headlines because we have some news this week. We're recording this on Monday at 3:09 p.m. Eastern right now. So on Sunday evening, Dante DiVincenzo with the Minnesota Timberwolves faced off against the New York Knicks in what was by far the best preseason game we've seen so far. It was intense. The starters played through the third quarter. And early in that game, DiVincenzo went to the free throw line and he said something that went viral on social media. He was misquoted. People thought he said, "Thank you for the trade, Tibbs. Thank you for the trade. That's what happens when they let you run the show." It turns out he said so himself. Others looked into this, including Wob over on X. He actually said, "I can't finish, right, Tibbs? I can't finish. That's what happens when they let you run the show." So he still is talking trash. He still said that's what happens when they let you run the show. After the game, he was kind of separated from Rick Brunson, assistant coach on the Knicks, the father of Jalen Brunson. DiVincenzo was at Brunson's wedding not long ago this offseason. So a lot of drama between the Knicks and Timberwolves. I can't wait to see these two playing an actual game, Dan. What were your thoughts on what we saw between Minnesota and New York?
Yeah, to me, this was it's actually amazing how many lip reading experts we have on Twitter, right? but just the fact that this was just like pure chirping, I think that Dante DiVincenzo has a chip on his shoulder, and as if this guy needs any more chip than he already has. Like, he already has a championship with the Milwaukee Bucks, but I think he was kind of feeling like, yo, I was the throw-in piece of this trade, and what better way to like kind of just chirp back at his buddies by actually dropping buckets on him and just playing extremely well. I totally agree with you. That was like an actual regular season atmosphere. And just to have the added layer of the beef marinating in the background of like whatever he's got going on with Rick Brunson, that's kind of crazy. Like, that's the NBA, man. I love the drama, love all of the narratives that come within the storylines. But I respect DiVincenzo because not only did he clarify his comments, he was like, "Hey, man, I'm going to handle this issue with Jalen's father privately. So whatever's going on, I'm sure they'll have it handled." But just an all-around great game.
Sure. And purely from a basketball standpoint, what I'm really intrigued by with DiVincenzo is we saw in the playoffs, well, all regular season for the Knicks, he was great. But in the playoffs, game one, he had 25 points. Game two, he had 28 points. Game three, he had 35 points. Game seven, he had 39 points in the elimination game for the Knicks. Obviously, they lose, but he was amazing in the postseason for the Knicks. He's a pivotal player all season long. And now you see with Minnesota, they're using him in kind of this hybrid point guard, shooting guard role. And so we're talking about breakout players later. We don't have him on our list. We're focusing on some other guys. But it looks to me like the Wolves, their priority this offseason, they drafted Rob Dillingham on draft night. They traded one future first and one swap to get up to number eight with the Spurs to get him a spark plug scoring guard. They drafted Terrence Shannon, a two guard who can handle the ball and go downhill. And then they trade for Julius Randle, a forward who can handle the ball a little bit, who can play make from the perimeter. And then they also get DiVincenzo in that trade, who people think of as a two guard. But last night he had 7 assists, no turnovers. He was running pick and roll. He's been doing that in the preseason for the Wolves. It looks to me that they plan on having DiVincenzo as a potential 1 and 2 next to Anthony Edwards. How do you think all these ball handlers now supporting Mike Conley and Anthony Edwards changes the complexion of what the Minnesota Timberwolves could be this season?
I think it's a game changer. And when I was assessing this trade, it was, for me, it was like, this could be a win-win for both teams. Like, I see where Cat fits in the system with Tibbs and in that five-out system now, especially because there was so much need in a big man. But I thought Minnesota was the true winner of this trade, not only because of their cap flexibility in bringing in Julius Randle. They have the decision to re-sign him if they want to. But Dante DiVincenzo was the piece that they needed. If you look at them like last year, it's like, whoa, why would you break up a team that went to the Western Conference Finals? Well, what if this move makes them better? They got better for their depth. And if you go to their playoff roster, most teams only run, you know, a 7 to 8 man rotation in the playoffs. And now their worst man now is Nickeil Alexander-Walker. You're essentially replacing Kyle Anderson with Dante DiVincenzo. What you need a floor spacer. You need someone that can take care of the ball. You mentioned him having 7 assists on Sunday night. He has a 4-to-1 assist to turnover ratio in the preseason. This guy is creating so much more versatility for this Minnesota team. And he's talked about it a lot in his pressers since joining the Minnesota Timberwolves about how fluid this offense is and how comfortable he feels. He took some of the learnings from, you know, playing off ball with the Golden State Warriors and applied them here. He is a legitimate threat. And if Mike Conley, you know, he's 36 years old, if he ever goes down, they actually have a really solid floor to put in Dante DiVincenzo in that position where he's already shown that he can run an offense. He can play a multitude of positions. This was like one of the best moves of the offseason to make the Minnesota Timberwolves better for the long term.
I think so too, Dan. I mean, like I said last week, I believe it was my podcast with Tom Haverstraw. I said initially, I was like, yeah, the Randle fit with Gobert could be weird, but their front court flexibility is now amazing because Naz Reid can take on more of Cat stuff. And the DiVincenzo aspect of it, though, as well, like they just have more guys who can handle and more guys who can create. And I increasingly feel like the more time I get just to think about that trade and the more we get to kind of see these guys on the court, Randall's going to make his debut on Wednesday, according to Chris Haynes against the Bulls. The more time I get seeing them, the more I feel like the Wolves, they just rolled the dice on draft night. They rolled the dice again now, and these are upside big swing moves, not just for the long term with cap flexibility, but for the short term with trying to take advantage of this window that's wide open in the Western Conference. I mentioned Randle is coming on Wednesday to make his preseason debut for the Wolves. That happens to be against the Chicago Bulls, and reports are that Lonzo Ball will be making his long-awaited return after 2.5 years away. He had cartilage transplant surgery a year ago in his knee. Dan, I am really, really excited just to see Lonzo on the floor. He became one of my favorite players in the entire league. His improvement as a shooter, I think, is an inspiring story. The way he went from that ugly-looking slingshot jumper to become a knockdown guy in New Orleans, and then he took that to Chicago. And him, like him and Caruso are helping defining that team with their energy and their connective playmaking and their defense. And I don't know what he's going to look like, but I'm just very happy that he's back.
I am too. And I think that this, you know, I think the journey that he's had as a basketball player, I mean, just having to watch him go through the multiple knee surgeries and still not having an answer to him actually making it back to the court. Like, I think we're all as basketball fans just so happy the fact that he's actually getting a chance to play again. So many careers have ended short because of these debilitating knee injuries. And, you know, I mean, imagine when Chicago was healthy, like their defense was just so good with Lonzo there, picking up 94 feet. He was a 40% three-point shooter before he went down. He just added a whole nother dimension to their game. And I just hope that he can, you know, at least have some kind of a role in that rotation because the Bulls don't have a lot to celebrate. So if they can at least get Lonzo back on the court, that's a nice little small win.
I just hope he still has the shot. I hope after 2.5 years away, he still has the jumper. His mechanics have not reverted back to what they were before he was working with Fred Vinson, the amazing shooting coach who used to be in New Orleans. He has since left there. We also have news that a guy is going to be out for the remainder of the preseason. Joel Embiid is going to be out for the rest of the preseason. On my podcast with Dan Devine last week, we had heard that he was being evaluated. His knees were being evaluated. Out for the remainder of the preseason. Is this concerning from the Sixers perspective, or is this more just you're a Sixers fan, Dan? Is this just the norm at this point that you're just looking at the positives? Paul George is here. He's better than Tobias Harris. Tyrese Maxey looks like he's taking another leap. Is this just normal to you, or are you just continually worried about Joel?
I think it's a combination of both. I think it's, you know, from a fantasy perspective, I've been touting like, oh, Joel Embiid's becoming a value because he's sliding down draft boards because he's having these Kawhi Leonard-like you know, announcements that are coming out. But I think this most recent development to me just signals what we've already known, is that Joel Embiid is not going to play over 60 games. And if he's not going to play 60 games, you have to figure out a way to win the non-Embiid minutes. And that's what this whole offseason was about. It was about raising the floor, bringing in Paul George, a guy that can create his own shot, also be a willing playmaker, but also a lockdown defender. Another tier above Tobias Harris. But then also you go out and get Andre Drummond, one of the most coveted big men free agents on the market, to kind of, you know, be that placeholder whenever Embiid can't play. This team is good enough to at least get to the playoffs. And if Embiid is right in what he's saying, he's accomplished everything he's wanted to on a basketball level except winning a championship. His goal is to get to the playoffs healthy. And if that's the case, as a Sixers fan, I should feel good about that, because what we have to imagine what it would be if Embiid was actually healthy through an entire postseason run. He got hurt last year on that 70-game performance, and it was just downhill from there. I've always said that, you know, the Sixers will only go as far as Embiid trusts his teammates. This getting out in the open now is at least going to give the opportunity for these players to step up and know what life is like playing without Joel Embiid, which I think should be a good thing in the long run. It's just frustrating that the best player on, you know, the Sixers, and probably one of the top players in the world, won't be as available as we've seen in the past. So I think it's just a cautionary tale of, you know, this is what happens when you have knee injuries. Kawhi Leonard's going through the same thing. It's going to be a struggle, but if you're healthy in the playoffs, that's all that matters, if you can win a championship.
Definitely. I mean, if they can wrap him up, you know, keep him safe and bubble wrap until April, then it would make sense to do that. Embiid himself also said he doesn't think he'll play a back-to-back again for the remainder of his career. I had heard earlier this summer that he won't play back-to-backs this season. He's saying it for the rest of his entire career, so that's an even greater step. But I think you said it, Dan. This whole offseason for Philadelphia was about providing star support behind Joel Embiid. That's why they got Paul George as a clear as day upgrade over Tobias Harris. Say what you want about Paul George. Like, you can criticize some of the playoff stuff with him, some of the shortcomings, hitting the three-point shot off the side of the backboard. So, like, I get it, but Tobias Harris is terrible. He was so bad for Philadelphia. And Paul George is a better handler, a better defender, a better finisher, better literally in every single category in basketball. And so if you have that player with better depth on your team, with Tyrese Maxey, who looks even better this season, his shot looks quicker. Yep. He looks more athletic. He looks stronger. I think I said on X the other day that Maxey looks like he could push 30 points per game for stretches if he needs to for Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I believe that through and through. And that's also like not that – like some people were saying, it's just preseason KOC. It's a hot take. He averaged 25 last year.
It's not a hot take at all.
That is not a hot take. It's kind of mild, actually.
He's ascending up the charts. Like, I mean, last year he was most improved player. Now, that's going to be a whole nother conversation. But I think he's gone from that level of like, I'm really good, to now I'm an all-star, to now he could be all NBA. He's that good. And to your point of like him bulking up in the offseason, he's a quicker release. He's giving me vibes of like Damian Lillard when he was on his come up. And that's going to be scary. And I can't wait. So Maxey could be an all NBA player this year. I can't wait.
I don't think you're being hyperbolic. I don't.
No.
I don't. I mean, Dame is a legend, and he's a legend in part, not just because his production during the regular season, but his playoff clutch moments. But Maxey, you can't underrate the trajectory that he's on and what he could become. And so with Philadelphia last season, when you had Maxey and Embiid on the floor together, they outscored opponents by 11.8 points per 100 possessions. If you just had Embiid on, they outscored opponents by 4.3 points per 100 possessions. When it was just Maxey without Embiid, which was most of their minutes, 1,668 total minutes, they were barely better than average, 0.4 net rating. And then without either of those guys, they got outscored by 2.1 points per 100 possessions. So if you have a better Maxey, and if you add Paul George, and you have this better depth, like with now you got Eric Gordon, you have Kyle Lowry for a full season, still have Kelly Oubre, you have Andre Drummond, a better backup center. He goes up and down the board. Exactly. Caleb Martin. How about even Jared McCain, a rookie who looks pretty good in preseason for the Sixers? Suddenly, if Embiid's playing, I don't know, 55 games or even only 40 games, whatever the number is, your team is going to be pretty good without him. And then with him, maybe you're looking like the best team in basketball for stretches of the season. You're probably not going to become the favorites over Boston. There's still going to be people that are picking Milwaukee over you if they're healthy. There's still going to be people picking the Knicks, but you can look like one of the best teams in basketball with Embiid, and that's all that matters come April, May, and June. So I'm really optimistic about what the Sixers can be this season, as long as Embiid is healthy come April. But as long as he's healthy in April. Yeah, big if. Let's talk about another team that people are really skeptical about. Tom Haberstroh said on my pod last week how he believes the Suns are the team that are most likely to blow it up. And he talked about how, you know, you got the Wolves and Anthony Edwards already trying to lure Kevin Durant and Booker and the Knicks with the CAA connection, and that if the Suns implode, suddenly maybe things go downhill there. And I think there's a possibility of that. It's a non-zero chance that the Suns go that path this season. However, they still have an absolute ton of talent. They still have three stars on their team. They have more depth than they had last season, and they might have the steal of the draft in Ryan Dunn. Ryan Dunn this preseason, he goes 28th as a sophomore out of Virginia. At Virginia, he was this unbelievable defender. He was like, he's 6'6", 6'7", long arms, strong frame. He could lock down every position on ball, centers, quick guards, forwards. It didn't matter. He was unstoppable on defense. And then he was amazing off ball as well, intercepting passes, protecting the rim, playing as a small ball center, rotating over. It didn't matter. Ryan Dunn is one of the best defensive prospects we've seen enter the league in years. I compared him to Herb Jones in my draft guide. There's a chance he could be even better than Herb Jones. I don't think I'm being hyperbolic in saying that. However, offensively, he sucked as a shooter. He was 7 of 35 in 34 games last season. 7 of 35. He was a non-factor. He didn't shoot. He was reluctant. Team sagged off of him. The vision for Ryan Dunn that a lot of teams had and that I shared as well is he's going to be that dude kind of in the dunker spot. He's athletic. He can set screens and roll to the rim, but he's not going to be a shooter. Well, okay, maybe things are different now for Ryan Dunn, because in four preseason games, he's 12 of 27 from three. He hit 6 3-pointers on Sunday for the Suns. He has almost as many three-point attempts in four preseason games as he did in 34 games all of last season. He has more makes in four preseason games than he did in all of last season for Virginia. So I ask you this, Dan. The Suns seemingly have this guy who could, as a rookie, at 21 years old, be one of the better 3-and-D guys as a role player in the league. Now, he needs to continue shooting, but I have like zero doubts about Ryan Dunn on defense. Zero. If the shot's for real, how does that change the way in which reviewing this entire Sun system if those stars are supported by an elite role player like Ryan Dunn?
That was always the question for me with the Suns, was like, what else after the big three? And if one player of that big three isn't present, like Bradley Beal was for half the season, what does that mean for the whole landscape of the team? And I think that they've just made very strategic moves over the course of this offseason, also with the head coaching. I wasn't expecting Ryan Dunn to be this prolific at three-pointers. You know, he's attempting 7 per game in the preseason. That's crazy for someone that was just a non-shooter. And I kind of had him pegged. You compared him to Herb Jones. I was more on the Matisse Thybulle area with it, like a guy that's like a lockdown defender, easily could be all defensive team, but just doesn't really do much else in terms
of
like
Andre Robertson type, someone like
exactly,
that.
Exactly. Just someone that, you know, maybe they stand in the corner and shoot threes. Well, if you're hitting him at this type of clip, that's like that's just an unheralded steal of the draft right there. Like that borderline could be a heist if he actually continues this pathway. And so when you look at the bench now, you got Royce O'Neal there, Grayson Allen's your sixth man. This is a very deep Phoenix Suns team. And with the amount of three-pointers that they're attempting under Mike Budenholzer, this offense is going to be humming. And I can't say it enough. Like, I think that this is an underrated team, and I think everyone's got this view and perspective of the Frank Vogel era and the injuries with Beal. This is going to be a highly efficient offensive engine that if you're going to get that kind of support off the bench, they're going to be a top three, top four team in this Western Conference. They could outtake the Denver Nuggets. I think that the Nuggets are a team that is going to regress just based off of the moves that they've made. I actually feel like they got worse from last year if you look at their roster from top down. Whereas the Suns, I think they've only bolstered it. They got a very competent offensive-minded coach, Yusuf Nurkic, if he can get over his thumb injury. I think it can be a really nice piece for them. Could be their Brook Lopez of sorts. This is going to be an exciting team. And if Ryan Dunn actually gets the minutes in this rotation, which I think he's proven to be, this is going to be a pretty scary unit.
Yeah, and also one addition that we didn't mention is Tyus Jones as well. Tyus Jones has led the NBA in assist to turnover ratio for three consecutive years. So you go from a system in which it's Booker and Beal and KD all trying to run a little bit of point, and none of them are true point guards. And I understand the logic of doing that with the personnel that you had, but now you replace him.
Let's get a real point guard in the room, guys. Yeah,
it's like the realest point guard in the league. Like Tyus Jones is a throwback true guard. Mm-hmm. And so you add him to the mix. And also, by the way, Tyus Jones has become a 40% guy on catch and shoot threes as well. So if Booker's running point, or if KD's running a high pick and roll with Nurkic as a screener, or Dunn setting a forward screen with KD and Ryan Dunn, whatever the system is, Tyus Jones can be a knockdown guy in the corner. It's not like he's a liability. So I think this Suns team belongs in that championship contention bucket more so than the blow it up bucket. I wouldn't rule them out entering that point, but injuries would have to happen. Exactly. I think this team would really have to be derailed. I don't think it's going to be a production thing, because I mean, how quickly forget with this team? Like, it wasn't that long ago. It was literally last season. They won 49 games with all of the issues that they did have.
Right.
And so I wouldn't be surprised if this is a high 50s win team, provided they stay healthy. That's the big if. We'll see if they end up doing that. Dan, coming up, we're going to be talking about all breakout team. I'm going to be setting you up to select an all breakout team. But first, I want to remind everybody, please subscribe to the Kevin O'Connor Show if you haven't done so already. Whether you're listening on YouTube or on Spotify or Apple, please subscribe. Leave us a 5-star rating as well. It really does help out the show. All right, Dan, let's talk about some breakout players. You've been doing work on Yahoo Sports from a fantasy basketball perspective on breakout teams. So we can talk a little fantasy here, but also just straight NBA with some of these breakout guys. I want you to select an all breakout team. So we're going to use traditional positions here, 2 guards, 2 forwards, 1 center with these teams. And I want to take the top 4 most improved player candidates off the table according to BetMGM odds. That means no Victor Wembanyama, no Evan Mobley, no Jonathan Kuminga, no Jalen Williams. They're the top 4. All of them you could select in their own different right, but we're going to remove them from discussion for the all breakout team. Where do you want to start? With your guard, a forward, a center? Where do you want to go, Dan?
So before I get into that, just have a philosophical question for you. Has the NBA voters' minds changed on what is the most improved, what qualifies as most improved, or what is a breakout? Because Victor Wembanyama does not meet the criteria. He's already here. He's already broken out. I know he's going to get that much better, but I look at last year where, you know, Tyrese Maxey was the guy that was like really good, that was going to all-star level. But Coby White, to me, got like no regard for most improved player when he jumped from like 9 points a game to like 19. So I just wonder as a voter, you know, what is the criteria now for what is a true breakout and most improved player?
I don't know what the criteria is, to be totally honest with you. I mean, it feels
it's
different
changing a little bit though, right?
It is. I mean, if you look at the voting last year, so I just pulled up the ballot, the final results from last year. Maxey won, as you said. He had 51 first place votes. Some of the other guys with first place votes: Coby White had 32, Alperen Şengün had 6, Jalen Williams had 5, Jalen Brunson had 3. Speaking to your point about different types of players, Denny Avdia had 1, Tyrese Halliburton had 1 as well. Somehow Grayson Allen also got a 2nd and a 3rd place vote. Duncan Robinson got a 4th place vote. Cam Thomas was on there with, you know, 2 2nd place votes, 3 the 3rd place votes. So like there's a lot of different types of players for the most improved player of the year award. And I don't exactly I think every voter has different criteria. It's kind of like for MVP, how I remember years ago, I hope I'm not misquoting her. I remember Ramona Shelburne saying on a podcast, she's like, I factor in narrative and story into my vote. But then you have other voters who are like, that's stupid. Why would you do that? It's all about the numbers. And then you have other voters who are like, no, the numbers don't matter. It's all about just production on the court and what I'm seeing with my eyeballs. So I think the NBA actually does a really good job with their 100-person voter pool at bringing in like a diverse collection of mindsets and viewpoints of the game. As for Victor Wembanyama as a most improved player of the year candidate, not just a candidate, but the favorite on BetMGM, plus 700 right now. Overwhelming, right? I don't think Victor will win, and I don't imagine that he'll be the player receiving my vote, but I'm also the person who said he's going to be top five MVP. I'm also the person who said he's going to be a first team all NBA guy. I'm also the guy who said like Victor's going to average 28 points and 14 rebounds and six assists and five blocks and three steals this season. I'm also that guy, right? So if he did that and he goes from rookie of the year who didn't get top 15 all NBA, even though he was on my third team last year, if Victor did all that, if he becomes like fifth in MVP voting, maybe people do consider him the MVP, the most improved player. But ultimately, I think there's going to be more than enough guys this season that fit the more traditional criteria of the most improved guy, including those other guys. Mobley, he averaged 21 points per game in the playoffs against Boston. He, in his first preseason game, he had 19 points in 19 minutes. So if Mobley at plus 1100 right now on BetMGM, if he takes a leap this year and continues what he did in the playoffs, he's a candidate. Kuminga, like we saw what he did in January after he called out Steve Kerr.
Give me the starting unit.
He averages almost 20 points per game. Yeah, and he shot almost 40% from three. Mm-hmm. Like he did take a leap. And then Jalen Williams, talked about him on the podcast last week. Like his three-point rate looks like it's going to go way up. 10 three-pointers in 33 minutes of preseason so far. If he's the guy for OKC, if he becomes a true second star, he's easily, I think, going to become the favorite sooner than later. But that's why we're removing those four guys off the table for the all-breakout team. And because I think they're the favorites. And then there's other guys that are worthy of talking about. And that's what I want to get into you here with Dan. So when we build out this team, where do you want to begin? With a guard, a forward, or your center?
Let's start with the guards. I'm going to start with Brandon Pajemski. And I think Brandon Pajemski right now is a player that most people may not be regarding as a potential breakout because of the fluidity of Steve Kerr's rotations. I think much of this preseason was an exercise to understand what continuity works, what lineups can he actually mix in here to actually get some sustained success? Because that was the problem, as you just brought up last year. Why was Kuminga on the bench for so long? What was this rotational shuffle? And I think what we're going to learn is that Pajemski, hopefully his nose is okay from his injury on Sunday, but he's going to be a staple of this rotation. And I think he's going to play a myriad of roles. He's one of the better rebounding guards that we have at the position. Only Luka Doncic, Josh Giddey, Cade Cunningham, I believe, had a higher rebounding rate at a position last year. And when you look at what he's doing from a three-point perspective, he shot 39% from three last year. That's a huge opportunity for growth in the Warriors system. They couldn't find anybody really reliable to knock down those shots. They've now replaced Klay Thompson with Buddy Hield, De'Anthony Melton, and now Pajemski as well. And when you look at the totality of what Pajemski can do, I just think he just offers more upside than his two counterparts because he locks down on defense. He's a great playmaker as well. You know, he played point guard at Santa Clara. He had opportunities to run the second unit alongside with Chris Paul last year. And I think this is just an overwhelming opportunity for him to see more usage in 30 minutes. This guy's going to see his points, rebounds, and assists all go up, as well as shooting a high volume of threes in this new look Warriors team.
I think Pods and Kuminga too, and the additions that you mentioned, that the veteran players, that's one of the reasons why I don't think it's crazy to be bullish about what the Warriors can be. Haverstroh said last week he thinks they'll win 50 plus games. They have young guys on this Warriors team that we've seen get better year to year. If you go back to Santa Clara for Pods, like he got better from his freshman to sophomore year in college. He was awesome for Santa Clara. He gets better at the NBA level over the course of the season with more opportunity, more put on his plate by Steve Kerr. And Kuminga, the explosion that he had was pretty significant as well over the second half. But with Pods specifically, Clay's out. And they believe in Pods. That front office did not want to trade Pods this summer. They didn't want to include him in Lauri Markkanen deals. The front office views Pods as a pivotal piece of this team today and of the future. And so I think when a player has that buy-in behind him from an organizational perspective, it's at least indicative of what they envision for him, not just long-term, but short-term here too, when you're trying to make the most of Stephen Curry as he's entering, you know, the twilight of his career. He's in his mid-late 30s at this point. He might play into his 40s, but we're closer to the end than we are at the beginning here. But he's still a championship caliber player. We saw what he did in the gold medal game. We saw what he did in the Olympics. Steph is still capable of being a key figure on a championship team. And Pods could be one of those guys that's part of that. So I agree with Pods. He'd be on my team as well. Who else you got as a forward or a center or your other guard?
So let's go with another guard. I'm going to go with Cam Thomas of the Brooklyn Nets. And this one's going to be interesting because I think he's not going to become a household name really until the Nets decide when they want to play capture the flag. But at this point, if you look at Cam Thomas's trajectory, he didn't really have a chance to really showcase what he could do under Jacques Vaughn. Once Jacques Vaughn was fired last year, he kind of held him back. He averaged 25 points with 4 rebounds and 4 assists. And where I come away most encouraged by Cam Thomas's trajectory is really that unheralded playmaking. He never really got a chance to have the ball in his hands as a creator. And I think that's where the growth we're going to see in this season, because there aren't really many scoring options outside of him. We already know that he's a bucket getter. That's how he's been typecasted. And I think Jordy Fernandez has done a really good job of putting him in positions, at least in the offseason and training camp, to give him more opportunities as a creator to develop some of those other players. And this is going to be a developmental rebuild. I don't know when they're going to trade off the assets of the Dorian Finney-Smith. And, you know, I don't know if Ben Simmons has any trade value anymore, but some of these veterans are going to get off the team.
Zero.
Yeah, exactly.
Just zero.
But at some point, you got to recognize that Cam Thomas is going to be the focal point of this offense, and he could be one of their cornerstone pieces around Nick Claxton and whoever that future pick may be. He's contract eligible, so he has a financial motivation to really be great this year. And he was one of only 9 players last year to have a 30% usage rate and score 20 points per game last year. So I think it already speaks to what he's capable of. And now that you add in more responsibility, I think you're going to see a more well-rounded player that's actually going to become the top 15 scorer in the league. And I think that he could actually get there. Like, he could average 25, 26 points per game this year.
It's interesting with Cam Thomas. He's a guy I have always liked. I had Cam Thomas ranked. I think I had him like 10, 11, or 12 in his draft class. I've always liked Cam Thomas. And his productivity over the years, you talk about last season, what he did after Jacques Vaughn was fired. The year prior, I mean, he had that 3-game stretch in February where he had 44 points one night, 47 the next game, 43 the next game. And it's like, yo, why aren't they feeding this guy all the time? But it's just never, he's never been in a winning situation. He won't be in a winning situation this year either. Mm-hmm. From a fantasy perspective, I think Cam Thomas undoubtedly is probably going to be like a favorite sleeper. Is he like go-to sleeper that people are trying to draft this year?
Yeah, he's going in the 6th round, which to me, like, you're not going to find a more prolific scorer that late in the draft. You know, that could potentially be top 15 in scoring, but then also have this, you know, I think he could get up to 4 to maybe potentially 5 assists. I think he's going to end up in around 4.5 assists per game. But when you add in the combination of his 3-point percentage and just his efficiency gains, I think that's going to be one of the biggest things I'm going to be watching for Cam Thomas. You know, in his last preseason game, he scored 12 points in 17 minutes on 4 shots. Like, that's
it's crazy.
Peak efficiency. And if he can get to the line more, he's a great free throw. He's a, you know, plus, you know, free throw shooter. This is going to be a guy that could shoot, you know, 47%, 25 points per game, 4.5 assists. That's a true breakout guy to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Cam Thomas belongs on the list. Hopefully at some point he's able to do it in a winning situation. It's not going to happen this year in Brooklyn. Maybe he'll be a trade guy. Who knows?
Maybe
a team will take a look and say, we want Cam Thomas to be our spark plug. I think another guard that, you know, belongs in that conversation, he was on your breakout list on Yahoo Sports as well, Emmanuel Quickley. You look at what he did last year after he was traded from the Knicks to the Raptors. He averaged 18.6 points per game and 6.8 assists per game, up from 15. 15 and 2.5 with the Knicks. And if you look at some of the more advanced numbers, his usage just skyrocketed. With the Knicks, he got 41 touches per game, up to 75 with the Raptors. With the Knicks, he had 3.2 minutes of possession time per game. That went up to 6.2 with the Raptors. With the Knicks, he ran 14.5 pick and rolls per game. That went up to 26.3 per game with the Raptors. So quickly is a guy, you know, there's a lot of guys on that Raptors roster that are deserving of touches and minutes and opportunity. There's a lot of mouths to feed there, but quickly seems to be the guy last season that the Raptors were, you know, really starting to feature, and maybe he ends up being a breakout guy as well.
Yeah, I mean, RJ Barrett's dealing with a shoulder injury right now, so I think Emmanuel Quickley's a guy that can get out to a hot start. And then if you look at, you know, his usage with Scottie Barnes and RJ Barrett on the floor, he only saw a 2% decline when they were on the court. So he's still seeing a healthy 20% usage rate that's likely going to go up if there's any injury. So I just can't say enough about Emmanuel Quickley and what he could do, not only from a fantasy perspective, but I think, you know, the Toronto Raptors, they found their true point guard and they invested in him. You know, that's why they gave him that massive extension. And I think we're going to see him, you know, see close to 33 minutes a night. And if he's getting that much opportunity in terms of minutes, the usage and the production is only going to follow suit. So I think this is actually one of my, if I was betting on this award, I think Emmanuel Quickley at, I think he's 20-1 right now. He's one of my deep sleepers in that award category that could see the biggest jump in production that could actually warrant being an actual most improved player.
Who do you have as a forward or a center?
Let's go Jalen Johnson. And okay. I think he had a mini breakout last year, but I think we kind of got cut short because he only played 56 games. But when I go back and I look at, you know, in totality of all the players that, you know, have this like upside appeal and have cross-categorical opportunities, Jalen Johnson just screams value to me and upside. So last season, obviously, DeJounte Murray was the secondary playmaker. Now that he's gone, what happens? Risha Shea doesn't have the profile to do that. Bogdan Bogdanovic is certainly not that guy. He's a bucket. And then you have Jalen Johnson. And so I just came away really encouraged last season with the fact that he averaged 3.6 assists. That was 83rd percentile among centers, according to Clean the Glass. And if that rate is just going to go up on top of his efficiency, his defensive chops, man, this is going to be a guy that could see all-star level appeal right now. And I don't know where I stand with the Atlanta Hawks in terms of like their actual situation. Like if they play well, Trae Young will be happy. He won't ask for a trade. Everything is kumbaya. If they're bad, I don't know if this goes left. However, right now, at the beginning of the season, I know that Jalen Johnson is a focal point of this Atlanta Hawks team. His points went up from 9 to 16 last year. He averaged almost 9 rebounds a game. He's going to be a 20-10 double-double guy that could potentially average 5 assists. There's only a handful of bigs that can do that in the league. And so I think with combine that with his efficiency and his defensive attributes, this guy has breakout written all over him too.
I think Jalen Johnson's a great choice, really. I mean, he became a reliable three-point shooter last season for the Hawks as well, only 35% from three, but I believe in his touch. I believe in his ability from behind the arc. Jalen Johnson's defense, as you said, the ability to be part of a two-man game with Trae Young. We'll see what style this Quinn Snyder offense continues evolving into, but Trae played with more motion and more movement last year than he ever has. And I think the roster is even better equipped for that style now. It feels to me, you know, Quinn Snyder has immense power and say in that front office. It's pretty clear to me with Risha Shea and some of their other personnel decisions that they've made that this is the direction that they want to go. They want to have this team that's playing with flow and different ball handlers and different attacking points. Jalen Johnson's part of that. He's a big part of that. And if Trae Young continues embracing that and playing that way even more so, it'll make me even more bullish on what the Hawks can be this year because, you know, Trae, they've been open to trades this past year. There has not been anything that's been remotely close or has made any sense involving Trae Young. And for the Hawks, it would only make sense to trade Trae Young if it's to the San Antonio Spurs so you can get back some of those picks you lost years ago in the DeJounte Murray trade. So unless it's the Spurs, I don't think that the Hawks would be trading Trae at all. But, you know, you draft Kobe Bufkin last year, who at Michigan was a great, you know, guy who can play with and without the ball. You have Larry Nance now on your roster, who's like been really good in those two-man game stuff as a big. He can set screens. He can do dribble handoffs. He can attack from the perimeter a little bit as well. Jalen Johnson, Reese Shea is really good off ball, good cutter, good mover without the ball, hustles up the floor in transition. It just... Dyson Daniels for that matter.
I was going to say, I was waiting for you to say Dyson Daniels.
A lot of guys, right, Dan? Yeah. Like, I feel like this is, I think the Hawks are going to be a playoff team, like maybe likely through the play-in, but maybe they get in as a sixth seed. They're not a championship team yet, but I think their roster is fun. I think it's going to be a competitive team.
I do too. And I think that there's the fact that Jalen Johnson has the ability to like just take a defensive rebound, push the pace, get out in transition, probably dunk on you. And if he's not doing that, he's going to hit bogey for a catch and shoot three. Like, I think that they're going to be actually one of the more high paced teams that we're not even talking about just because of their athleticism and their versatility. And I like what I saw from Reese Shea in the preseason. He actually looked pretty confident the last game that I watched. And, you know, he's throwing between the legs, like dump offs and in transition. Like, this is going to be a fun team. So, yeah, I feel your optimism in terms of at least being at minimum playing team.
Who else you got for your all breakout team, Dan?
Is Franz Wagner, has he broken out yet? Because I don't think he has.
I don't know. I mean, he was 1-for-15 in game 7. He was 9-of-24 in the Olympics. So I'm a big Franz Wagner guy. My longtime podcast listeners know I've said he'll be a top 20 player in the NBA someday. That, you know, recently that has not looked good. But so yes, tell me why I'm right.
It's going up. I'm telling you, it's going up. So I think the biggest thing for me for Franz Wagner was like, what did the Orlando Magic do in the offseason to kind of put him in the best position to succeed in and excel at what he's good at? He's a great downhill scorer, slasher. The three-point shot is obviously what needs the work, but I think from what we've seen from him and Paolo as complementary playmakers, getting KCP and Jalen Suggs as your starting point guard, now they have more space to operate. And the one area where I feel like Franz Wagner is really going to grow is getting to the basket and getting free throws. So, you know, this is a guy that averaged 19.7 points per game. He's going to push for 23, maybe 23 and a half, 24 points per game just by going to the line that more frequently. And if he can get that three-point percentage back up to his mean of like 35-36% that he shot the first 2 years of the season of his career, you're making up your points. That's going to offset right there. So I think that the Orlando Magic did a lot in terms of, you know, re-signing Wendell Carter Jr., who's been attempting three-pointers per game over the last few seasons. They just have all of these threats on the wings and the perimeter. And we know Jamal Mosley, what he can do to rally his team to be one of the best defensive units in basketball. I don't think it gets talked about enough about how much Franz Wagner impacts winning. Per dunks and threes, he was 94th percentile in EPM, estimated blocks, box score plus minus. But then also defensively, this guy can guard multiple positions. He's very rangy at 6'10". There's a lot of growth opportunities in specific areas where I feel like Franz Wagner will qualify to be an all-star. And I think the Orlando Magic are going to be one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. So I think he'll probably get his just due. He just needs to make his threes and get to the line more. And I think everything else will kind of fall into place.
I just hope the three-pointer becomes real at some point because that dude has insane touch near the basket, incredibly soft touch. He's an 85% guy from the free throw line. Franz Wagner has the ability to someday become a knockdown shooter from behind the arc. So like shooting below 30% last year from three and really struggling in the playoffs, 26% from three. I just hope it's not a mental thing. I hope it's just about extending his range, something simple mechanically that can be resolved. Because if it's a mental thing, that's a whole different issue. And if there's something going on there, I hope it's not that. Because it felt like at times last season, that's exactly what it was. But if it's something physical or whatever it is, he gets over it and gets through it. I'm still a believer in Franz. Because like you said, he impacts the game in so many different ways already as a connective playmaker, as a defender, as a rebounder, attacking the basket. Him and Paolo Banchero as a duo are pretty tremendous in terms of their size and abilities across different categories of the game with how many different things that they can do. So I'm also high on the Magic this year. I don't think they're yet a championship contender. I do not put them in the same category as the other top teams in the Eastern Conference, but I think they could finish above some of those teams in the Eastern Conference standings, but I wouldn't pick them necessarily as a championship team. So far we have Pods and Cam Thomas as your guards. We got Franz Wagner and Jalen Johnson as your forwards. We talked about quickly. We'll call him a sixth man. Now we need a center. Who's your five, Dan, for the all breakout team?
Let's round it home with Ivica Zubac, the 8-year veteran breakout here. The 27-year-old breakout.
No Kawhi. Lots of opportunity.
Dude, you're telling me. And I think it's also the one thing that I was really pointing to with Zoo is just his chemistry with James Harden. And, you know, Zubac had the third most, he was assisted by Harden, the third most on the team last year. Obviously, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard were the first two. So you remove Paul George from that scenario, someone's going to eat. And I think James Harden's always had this great connective rapport with his centers whenever he's been successful and is in Houston and for a time with the Sixers. But I think Zoo has really showed that he could be very efficient when he gets the minutes. I mean, he's never averaged over 30 minutes a night. I think he's going to have to because the Clippers' front court depth is just like non-existent. So from a fantasy perspective, I'm looking at value. Right now, Zoo's going in the eighth round. You're getting a guy that can probably average 13, 14 points with over 10 rebounds with a block and a half a game on really strong shooting splits. That's a steal, no matter how you look at it. And I think Zoo is going to put a lot of people on notice about how skilled he is. Me and our mutual buddy were talking about how he watched Zubac cook somebody overseas when he was like 17 years old and just the touch that he has. I just think that he hasn't really gotten enough opportunity to showcase his offensive skill set. And because they're just so depleted in terms of their front court, I think the Clippers have no other option. You're going to see what Zoo is about. And I think he showed in limited doses over the years how good he can be. And I think this is where it's all going to kind of come together and have his best season yet.
I think Zoo's a great pick because, like you said, Paul George is gone. Kawhi Leonard is out, and who knows how often he'll play at all. That means it's going to be a Harden-centric system. And Harden is always running a high dose of pick and rolls with his bigs. So last year, Harden and Zoo ran 14 pick and rolls per game last year. There's a ton of guard big combinations that run 20 plus. I think they'll probably hit 20 plus this season and be one of the highest usage duos in the pick and roll this season between Harden and Zubac. That's going to lead to shots at the rim for him. It's going to lead to drawn fouls, chances at the free throw line. It's going to lead to switches, and he's going to be posting up a smaller guy. And last year, he scored in the 93rd percentile from the post, according to Synergy Sports. So Zubac, whether it's pick and roll with Harden, post up opportunities, and then also just the overall importance that he's going to have to that team from a defensive perspective, I think Zubac is a really, really good pick as a center, as a breakout guy this year. So I think we get a pretty good squad. I mean, like you're not picking the squad to win a championship, but you're picking the squad as like a lot of good breakout guys. Zubac as our center, Jalen Johnson and Franz Wagner as forwards, Brandon Podzimski and Cam Thomas as the guards. We mentioned Emmanuel quickly. He can be our sixth man. Any other names you want to throw out there that belong in that breakout conversation?
Oh, other breakouts. I think that's a pretty good list. I had Jalen Suggs also on the list. I'm pretty high on him, Suggs. Just because he's going to have an opportunity to get more assists, leading the charge there for the Orlando Magic. Even though you know they're still playing through Paolo and Franz, I think he's going to have a really strong season. And then also a center. You know, we can go back to the A a little bit. Onyeka Okongwu. I'm just really curious about when that transition point's going to happen. Right, like Clint Capella's on the final year of his deal. He's always been rumored to be traded. Now, Onyeka Okongwu's contract actually hits the books. So it's like, you guys have been signaling that you're going to make him the guy. Like, when is it going to happen? Because he's increased his minutes, that being Okongwu, each of the last four seasons. He's eaten into that timeshare more and more every year. When is the year it's going to happen? I think this is the year that we'll see him emerge and probably get more floor time than he's had in the past. And, you know, Clint Capella is still going to have his useful moments, but I think the versatility of Okongwu and what he can bring, very efficient shooter, can do more outside of the rim, you know, the restricted area than Capella.
I think Okongwu is a really good one. And I wonder with Atlanta, from their perspective, do you want that breakout to be this year when a contract is coming up? Or do you want to wait and kind of suppress as much as possible and wait till next year? Because the trajectory that he's on from the free throw line, 63% to 73% to 78% to 79%, from 3-point range as a rookie, 0-of-3. As a sophomore, 0-for-0. In his third year, 4-of-13. And then his last year, his fourth year, 23-of-69. 33% is not like a mind-blowing percentage, but Okongwu has touch. He's improved his free throw line percentage. He's always had touch from the post area. And now the three-pointer is starting to click. So you're talking about a 240-pound center who can space the floor. That's important in today's NBA, is having a center that can stretch the floor. And that's especially important for this Atlanta team with Trae Young at point. So to me, if I'm the Hawks, yes, he'd be more expensive if this is his breakout year. You know, there's other questions with him staying on the floor as well. But to me, I think Okongwu is somebody that I'd want to invest in as much as possible this year, because you got to try to win. You got to try to win with Trae, and you got to try to build this thing out. You got to try to make this team be something that is trying to add and trying to go get pieces and trades, because you might have something. You might. I don't think they're anywhere close to some of those other teams in the East, but you got to go for it when you have a guy like Trae on your roster. And by the way, you have no other choice considering the fact you traded your other picks. So just go for it and try to make the most of what you have. Dan, where can we find your work at Yahoo Sports? I appreciate you coming on today, man, for the first time. Where can we find your stuff?
Yeah, you can find all my work on Yahoo Fantasy. Go just click on the basketball section. Also being collaborating with some of the NBA team at large on some of the season previews, so you can check out, get a whole holistic view on how it's going to look like for all these different teams. I have a fantasy spin in there as well, so check that out. Good work by Ben Robach and Dan Devine there. And yeah, all things fantasy. If you guys play fantasy basketball, do it on Yahoo. It's a really fun way to stay engaged in the game. And just keep an eye on stats, man. Why would you not want to follow a box score of Victor Wembanyama potentially doing a quadruple-double? This is like a historic time for basketball, man. So if you guys are fans of basketball, make sure you play fantasy basketball.
Absolutely. With Yahoo Fantasy, everybody always plays fantasy football, but fantasy basketball is incredibly fun in its own right. The different ways to play. What's your preferred style? Do you like categories? Like what's your number one style you like to play, or does it not matter to you?
Yeah, I'm a categories guy, but if you're coming from football, it's a way easier transition if you do points. It's very simple. The production you get turns into fantasy points. Simple and easy. Don't have to think about it too much. Draft a team, set your lineup, set and forget it. It's done. It's really fun. So I encourage anyone, if your fantasy football team sucks, go get a fantasy basketball team.
Go do it. Go do it. Go play fantasy basketball. You can do that. You can do a private league with friends, or you can do a public league as well. Just go to yahoo.com/fantasybasketball. Dan, thanks for joining me today, man.
Thanks a lot, KOC.
Up next, we're going to open up the mailbag for the first time. You guys sent in a ton of questions. If you want to email me for next week, email some predictions for the season predictions episode, kocshow@yahoosports.com. We're going to open up the mailbag coming up next. All right, everybody, let's open up the mailbag. Appreciate you guys for sending so many. We got audio questions and video questions. Like I said, that is preferred. We also do have some written email questions as well. If you don't get your question in today, there's a chance I use it next week, because I did get some that apply to our predictions episode as well. But let's get to 7 mailbag questions today, starting with Jacob, who has a question about the Oklahoma City Thunder.
What's up, KOC? My name is Jacob. I'm from Fayetteville, Arkansas. First of all, I just wanted to say congratulations on the new show. Second of all, I'm a huge Warzone fan. Peep the hat. And you get at least 100 cool points in my book for knowing Joe Woe and Breadman. All right, now to my question. I am a diehard Oklahoma City Thunder fan, but it's been a tumultuous bunch of years since they moved to this area. So my question is, what's going to be the biggest obstacle for OKC winning a chip in the next year or two, other than their lack of playoff experience? Because personally, I think that with the offseason additions that we made, it might just be the year that not only we can get over the Western Conference hump, but beat your Boston Celtics in the finals. All right, man, let me know what you think. And again, congratulations on the new show. I'll be tuning in twice a week. All right, peace.
Thank you, first of all, for sending that in. You were the first person to send a video question. That is much appreciated. I think, you know, as you said, age and lack of experience, they're the biggest hurdles for Oklahoma City. If you're talking about them winning a championship, as still the youngest team in basketball, they, like, those teams have to build chemistry. We saw this with Boston. They lost over and over and over again before they won it all. But besides the experience thing that you talked about, to me, the biggest hurdle for the Oklahoma City Thunder is who is that second star? You have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who is amazing, but who becomes that number two star for your team? Obviously, you look at the current roster, it's going to be either Jalen Williams or Chet Holmgren. Chet Holmgren entering only his second season. He was 26% from three last year in the playoffs. Can he take on a bigger role offensively? Can he evolve on the offensive end? Might be a little early for him. To me, Jalen Williams, it's got to be him if it's going to be this year. Last year in the postseason, he was way too reluctant to shoot. In the regular season, he only attempted 3.4 three-pointers per game. And granted, he shot them well. He just is not a high-volume shooter. He prefers getting into the mid-range area. To me, I think we're seeing indicators that's going to change. You can hear the way Dagnall is talking about the development of this roster, but also just Jalen Williams' choices on the court. So far in preseason, he's attempted 10 three-pointers in 33 minutes. Again, he only averaged 3.4 in 31 minutes last year. That was up from 2.7 in 30 minutes per game as a rookie. So It's only a little bit of preseason minutes. 10 three-pointers, though, in 33 minutes. If he's able to get up to 7 or 8 three-pointers per game with his efficiency, to me, that's what could help unleash him as an individual player, but also make everything else he does better for his teammates, because we know he can pass. We know he can attack. He can make his teammates better. So Jalen Williams becoming a more high-volume and still high-efficiency three-point shooter, that could be the second star the Oklahoma City Thunder need. But the unknown about that is the biggest hurdle for them winning the title this year. Let's go to another video question, this time from Adam on the Sixers.
What's up, KOC? My name is Adam, and I am a miserable Sixers fan. For reference, I own a Nerlens Noel jersey. I think that says a lot about who I am. I don't suffer from seasonal depression, but the closest thing I have to that is when the NBA playoffs start, because I'm just thinking about who the Sixers are playing in the second round. So with that said, where would you rank this Sixers team in the history of Embiid's career going into the playoffs? We do have depth. We have Caleb Martin. What do you think of this team? Thanks, KSC. Keep doing what you do.
Thank you, Adam, for the question. You said you own a Nerlens Noel jersey. I own a Rashawn Holmes shirt, so I understand you, even though I'm not a Sixers fan. I'd say, you know, to answer your question, this year's 23-24 Sixers squad, there's really only two competitors for the best Embiid-led roster. That's the 18-19 Sixers with Jimmy Butler, and then the 22-23 Sixers with James Harden. Both of those teams went to round two, game sevens. Of course, the 2019 Sixers sadly lost to the Kawhi Leonard Toronto Raptors, the four bouncer. The 2023 Sixers lost to the Celtics with that blown 3-2 series lead. I think those Sixers teams were very good. This Sixers team could actually be great. They have more top-end talent. Embiid is better now than he was then. He's won an MVP. He's a better overall talent, even if he's not playing as many games. Maybe that's a good thing, because you have Tyrese Maxey, who looks to be taking a leap this year. As I talked about with Dan Titus earlier in this podcast, Maxey's stronger. He looks more athletic. His shot looks quicker. Maxey is a guy that I think could put up all NBA caliber numbers. I'm a believer in him. He's a playmaker as well. He's improved so much there. And so you have Maxey getting better. You have Paul George, adding him as an all-star talent, so much better than Tobias Harris in every single way. Embiid just needs to be healthy in April. And even if he's not, this team could be much better when he's not on the floor during the regular season. When you have those guys at the top end, and then you're loaded with proven depth, Andre Drummond, the best center as a backup Embiid's ever had, Kelly Oubre, Caleb Martin, Eric Gordon, Kyle Lowry, upside guys, McCain is a rookie, bringing Yabusele over from overseas. There's a lot of guys on this Sixers roster that makes me feel that this is going to be the best group Embiid's ever had in his career, with that 19 and 23 squad being the only ones that were ever even close at all. Let's go to another voice message here from Martin on the Lakers.
What up, KOC? Just calling in. Quick question about my Lakers. Just wondering what you think our four guys would be off the bench. JJ recently said that he wants a 9-man rotation. And I've never been picked for one of these things, so if you don't pick me, it's probably the last time I'm listening to your pod. I'm just messing with you. But for real, man, keep doing your thing. Go Lakers.
Thank you for the question, Martin. So JJ, like you said, he talked about wanting a 9-man rotation for the Lakers. We know what the starters are going to be for them this year. What about the bench, though? I think Gabe Vincent feels like a shoo-in as a backup guard. Good two-way guy. He's healthy this season. Gabe Vincent should be one of them. Max Christie as a guard hopefully becomes more of a 3-and-D guy. He's getting a little bit older during his rookie contract here. Max Christie would be my other one. Dalton Knecht, I'd love to see him get consistent minutes. I'd love to see them invest in Knecht and see what he can do. He became such a potent scorer at Tennessee. At his first year with Tennessee after transferring as a fifth-year guy, he became better over the course of that season as well. They put more on his plate as a ball handler. He became better defensively the more they've asked of him with that volunteer system. I'd want to see J.J. Redick invest in Dalton Knecht. And then the fourth one is Bronny James. No, I'm kidding. It's not Bronny James. Bronny James should be in the G League. The fourth one would be Jared Vanderbilt once he's back on the floor. Until he is, maybe you roll with Jackson Hayes. So those would be, I'd say, pretty clearly the four guys that I'd want to see coming off the bench for the Lakers, knowing that their starters as of now will be D'Lo, Austin Reeves, LeBron, Rui, and Anthony Davis. I think that should be the full 9-man rotation for the Lakers. And, you know, there's been reports that they could look for a trade. We'll see if they end up doing that, because, yes, they could find a better center. I would be on the lookout for that. Let's go with some email questions now. We got a question from Matt. He asked, in what order will these teams raise the white flag? The white flag, of course, referencing Cooper Flagg this coming year, going to Duke. He debuts pretty soon for the Blue Devils. Cooper Flagg is looking like the clear number one pick. Not a lock for sure, but he's definitely the guy everybody's going to be talking about. So of those teams, the Wizards, the Pistons, and the Blazers, let's just say that with these, it's just these three teams. Of these three, who's most likely to, you know, be in the play-in conversation? To me, that's going to be Detroit, because you got Cade Cunningham operating in more space. Cade could take a leap this year. So I'd say Detroit would rank last of those three teams. So then it's between the Wizards and the Blazers. Both of these teams are young. They don't have a clear-cut star. I would go with number two being the Blazers in this conversation. I think they have more paths to having some productive stretches. You have Anthony Simons who can go off. You have DeAndre Ayton who's now shooting threes in preseason. You still have Jeremy Grant there, Shaedon Sharpe, Denny Avdia, who I had as in my top three ballot last year for most improved player. Maybe Scoot Henderson continues what he did to close the season, whereas the Washington Wizards, they don't have a whole lot. They lost Tyus Jones. They added some young players. Koulibaly, we'll see how he does in his second year. Alex Sarr is a rookie. You got Valanciunas at center and Kyle Kuzma and Jordan Poole, but like that's a crappy team. And I know the East isn't quite as strong as the Western Conference is. There's more lower-end talent. I'm still putting the Wizards as the leader in the clubhouse for raising the white flag, and that is a title that I'm going to steal and use in my power rankings at some point this season on Yahoo Sports or on this podcast. Let's go to a question here from Jono. Jono asked, when discussing the Celtics dynasty, I'm surprised the comparison to the early 2000 Pistons wasn't brought up. Five solid players, no true star, and an unselfish style of basketball. I wouldn't call the Pistons a dynasty by any means, but the blueprint is there for another run at the finals. I think that's a good point, Jono. I could see that being a great comparison. I'd only argue between those Pistons teams in the early 2000s is these Celtics teams is the fact that Tatum and Brown are greater than Chauncey Billups and Ben Wallace from a pure individual standpoint. Billups just inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame. Ben Wallace, one of the best defensive players ever. But Tatum and Brown, they bring the go-to scoring ability. And in the case of Tatum, he's one of the best defenders in the league, one of the most versatile. Jaylen Brown has become a lockdown guy on ball as well. Different types of stars, but Tatum and Brown have more stardom than Billups and Wallace did. And the Celtics team, man, like their depth, dude, I think it's a bit underrated with what you can expect from some of those bench guys improving. Peyton Pritchard's still young. Sam Hauser is still young. And I know those aren't names that you really talk about a lot, but before last season, people said, oh, the Celtics, they don't have enough depth. They're not going to have enough depth. Well, it turns out that they did. And now I think some of those young guys, even Xavier Tillman shooting threes in preseason, They have a lot of depth behind five all-star caliber talents and then Al Horford coming off the bench as well. So Boston, to me, they might actually be more of the juggernaut than actually that Pistons team being like role player by committee with an elite defense. But your point stands. I agree with you that the context that makes sense in the grand scheme of things, and that they don't have this clear-cut megastar all-time great player. Next up, we have a question from Austin. This is a non-basketball question. Austin said, I'm a big fan and super happy for you taking this next step in your career. Was there ever a moment when you knew you wanted to be in sports journalism? And if so, what was it? This is a good question, Austin. I've been asked, you know, in the past, like, you know, how do you get into sports media? And like, you know, like, when did you know that you liked sports or wanted to work in sports media? But like when I was a teenager, I always thought it'd be cool to be an NBA agent. For some reason that appealed to me. I thought it would be cool to like work for a team even and do stuff in a front office and all that. But I never really knew I wanted to work in sports journalism until actually like it was put right in front of my face. So in the summer of 2020, summer of 2012, I, you know, went to this thing at Comcast SportsNet New England for a Patriots Talk event. This guy in New England, Tommy Curran, longtime Patriots beat writer, he put out something on Twitter at the time asking people to answer trivia questions and to go there. So I answered that correctly, and I got an invite to this Patriots Talk event. And before I went to that, my dad said to me, he's like, Kevin, when you go, you should ask people how to get an internship at Comcast SportsNet. That would be awesome if you get that. And I was like, no, like there's no way that's going to happen. But I did. I went there. I was asking around like, hey, who do I talk to about applying for an internship? And they were like, just apply online, you dummy. And so, and so I applied online and I got an interview. And this was really the moment that I knew I wanted to work in sports journalism, because I interviewed with this guy, Maury Levine. He's the director of programming at now NBC Sports Boston. He used to work as a manager at Comcast SportsNet New England, but CSNNE became NBC Sports Boston. Anyway, during the interview, Maury asked me, you know, name the Red Sox starting lineup, name the Patriots offensive line. And all we did was talk sports for like 25, 30 minutes. And it was like in that moment, I was like, this is awesome. Like all we're doing is talking sports. We're talking sports and this is going to be my internship. And I got the opportunity. I remember getting in my car as a Hyundai Elantra. And like I screamed, like I cried tears of joy on the drive home. And like I knew in that moment that was a turning point for me, because I knew I was finally on a track that I was supposed to be on, even though I had no idea where it was going at that point. Like in that moment, I just knew that this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So it was really in that moment I knew I wanted to work in sports journalism. And whether it was behind the scenes as a producer or, you know, somebody on camera as a writer or whatever else, I'd be happy doing anything in sports, because it's always what I've loved most. And I'm still very thankful for my dad pushing me to, you know, have courage to ask people questions about how to get an internship. Because sometimes, you know, the carrot was like, you know, right there in front of me. It was always right there in front of me, but I was looking past it. And that was one of those moments where it started to become in focus. Reference to last Friday's episode with Dan Devine, we talked about bidet toilets. A lot of you, nobody thankfully sent videos of you with your bidet toilets, but we got a lot of comments about bidets. Trejo said in his subject of the email, bidets show your ass, you give a shit. Jake said, what a bidet wants, what a bidet gets. And then James said, bidetsketball, which I thought was quite good. And bidet said in his email, I'll just read it out right here. He said, listening to your recent show with Dan Devine, my ears perked up when you guys veered to the topic of bidets. As a well-traveled American, I could tell you that bidets are life changers. More for metaphorical sake, imagine this. You're walking down the street and a bird decides to make your arm the landing spot of last night's dinner. You wouldn't only wipe your arm with tissue and move on with your day. No. A modern day upstanding man like yourself surely would want to wash that putrefied arm. No. And he's right. James is right. It makes sense logically. And he also said later, if he were the president, he'd start a day one passing a mandatory bidets and government buildings law to give the American people a taste of what they've been missing. James, you get my vote over Trump and Kamala Harris. You get my vote as the next president of the United States. I'm all in favor of this, and I promise you, when I move into my next apartment, I will get a bidet. So I appreciate everybody messaging about the bidets and basketball or both. It's all much appreciated. If you want to hit us up for next week's predictions episode of the podcast, hit us up at kocshow@yahoosports.com. All emails and comments and questions are welcome, but next week is going to be all about predictions. For now, we're going to be back on Friday with another episode with Tom Haberstroh. Thanks to Joe for producing today's episode and the whole staff for putting it together. We really appreciate it. Please be sure to subscribe if you haven't done so already. We really appreciate you listening. Hope you have a great rest of your week.